good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Guess what? It's Monday, and it's Monday, and things go as Monday does. Anyway, it took a little over 4 minutes to get us hooked up. I had some technical problems today, but thank you for your patience. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us today, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen for the rest of the hour. And good afternoon, Dave. Good Monday.
Hey, the curse of Monday. It can only get better. Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. but we'll see what we can do, ladies and gentlemen. And again, thank you for your patience. So let's get started right away. And again, it was a blue Monday for gold, too. I should say a red Monday. Which is the same thing as a blue Monday. We have gold down $1.50 in the New York spot price after market at $1,292.60. You have silver at $16.48. You have platinum down $2 at $905. And palladium is holding right on that 1,000 level, down $8. You have the USDX is down 0.13 at 94.05. And crude oil was down 86 cents today at $64.95. And gold was up for most of the day. I mean, we were hovering around that 1300 level, but last minutes of trade, and it broke down just a little bit. And the paper markets today, of course, were having a strong day, which surprises me, but it's Monday, I guess. Nothing surprises me, I suppose. But the Dow is up 178 points at 24,813. The NASDAQ is up 52 at 7,606. And the S&P was up 12 at 2,746. You have the 10-year yield today up 0.04 at 2.94%. The euro was stronger with a weaker dollar, so gold didn't reflect that, but perhaps it'll follow through tomorrow. The euro was at 117. And, it's just the same old baloney in the news that has been around for months now. You know, it's the bickering with the regarding the tariffs. You had the G7 meeting, and I guess I should get back to, I'm not sure if we were going to talk about the G7 meeting today or not, Dave, but that was taking place this weekend, and of course it was all about the widening the global rift on this trade policy, and we are one of the G7, and with the tariffs, they were all whining about it was a foul mood at their meetings this weekend, and whining and moaning and groaning, and it really is kind of funny in a way. But some of the economic leaders on Saturday had asked U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin to convey their unanimous concern and disappointment about the metals tariffs that were imposed by Washington this past week. And of course, that was wrapping up a heated G7 meeting in Canada. Ministers and governors agreed that this discussion should continue at the Leaders Summit in Charlevoix, where a decision action is needed. And the aim of this is to restore a collaborative partnership to promote free, fair, predictable, and mutually beneficial trade, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on. And of course, I guess the European Union and Canada, they did both file challenges with the World Trade Organization. And we did talk about that on Friday, that it was just a matter of time until they did that. And the World Trade Organization will probably side with them. And I'm not quite sure what the next step will be. It's funny, the World Trade Organization hasn't done anything about China after all these years. They're probably one of the biggest abusers of that. And yet the world was silent while they were doing it. And now everybody is crying because we put on a little bit of a tariff on some steel and aluminum. But I guess Canada, which is the largest supplier of steel to the U.S., said it will impose tariffs covering about $12 billion on U.S. imports, and that includes whiskey, orange juice, steel, aluminum, and other products. Mexico announced an equivalent measure on a wide range of U.S. farm and industrial products, including pork legs, apples, grapes, cheese, steel, and other goods. And the EU plans tariffs on the U.S. exports, running the gamut from canoes to manicure or pedicure preparations. Well, that's important.
Absolutely.
That's important, you know. So, I mean, hey, why can't we get where Wisconsin makes cheese. You know, it's, I don't know. It's we'll see how this goes, and markets aren't paying any attention to any of the squabbles that have been announced, or the extra tariffs on everybody, or the talk of a tariff war anymore. So we'll have to see what really will affect the stock market. That remains to be seen. In fact, on Fridays, with the big number coming out of the jobs data report, you have the Atlanta Fed also said it expects the GDP to expand at a 4.8% pace in the second quarter. So we'll have to see. These are certainly revisions. And I don't know when that actual number on the GDP is to be. We still got another month or so for that number to come out. So, you know what? What was that old saying on? It was, I'll eat my hat if it comes out at 4.8%. And maybe I should say, I'll eat my gold coin if it comes out at 4.8%.
Mm. Ouch.
Gold is healthy for you. You can eat gold. Or maybe my silver coin, that would be healthier.
There
get my little colloidal silver in me. And
I suspect you won't be eating it, whether it's gold or silver. Or your Kentucky Derby Preakness hats.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, I don't know. I will be shocked if it's 4.8%. I think it will be over 3, but I don't think it's going to be over 4. And I'll be really shocked with all the talk and all this optimism, enthusiasm, if it isn't over 3, baby, back up those trucks to discount gold and silver, because you're going to need it sooner than what you think. But
yeah, a lot of posturing going on out there. I mean, your buddy Larry Kudlow, director of the White House's National Economic Council, says that, you know, he believes we've entered the longest, largest prosperity in a couple of decades. And he said, I know it's early in the game, but this is a prosperity era. It's a strong economy. What you've got here is continued job growth, low unemployment, and participation rates. Pretty good. We shall see, as I think the emphasis here is that, yes, it is early in the game, and I think his comments are a tad premature, but maybe he felt the need to support the paper markets.
Well, absolutely. He's a strong dollar guy. He said it, but, you know, he totally ignored the Great Recession of 2008, you know, never said it would, never even existed, and then he just totally ignores it. I'm still not sure to this day if he's even acknowledged it, but, you know, he's a strong dollar guy. And, you know, when we think about the longest prosperity period, what is that prosperity based on? I mean, it was all based on the creation of more debt. It was government cheap money thrown at the economies, world economies, in which they've all become synchronized. And I've said it again and again and again, but we're beginning to see more cracks than we're beginning to see the cracks closing. You know, you know, once I begin to see these cracks, you know, sort of disappear and mesh into a great economy, then we still have the problems that have to be addressed. And so I don't think we're out of the woods yet. Sure, we're enjoying a period of time where it seems that, things are better. We see building, we see construction, we see homes being built. We see people seem to be busy. And on the other hand, I continue to hear I'm working harder and harder, but I'm making less and less. It's harder for me to get by. I'm not getting ahead. And those are just things that you don't hear when we have a strong economy. And it's just not one type of business. It's, I have clients across this country in all different areas and in cities and in the rural parts in middle America. And people are having difficulties. Things are costing more. Now, you don't hear much about health care costs. I mentioned that the other day. You don't hear anybody talking about Obamacare anymore. All of a sudden, that's just written off, and it's like everybody was able to absorb these huge increases in health care based on some tax reform. Hey, I love tax reform. I love when I'm a corporation. That's a corporation. My taxes are going to go down. I love it. But that doesn't mean I can't accept the fact that there's something wrong with the big picture. And that the people that matter in this country are having difficult times. So, and we can look at these tax cuts. Will it really benefit? How is it going to help us when you have 1.6 or $1.3 trillion spent in 6 months, and then you have the spending bill that tax on another, and I'm just rounding out the numbers, another trillion and a half. It amazes me, Dave, that people can get behind this and saying this great econ we have a great economy. Well, yeah, if you put, $2 trillion plus dollars into the economy and everything, yeah, you're gonna see things move. But is it enough to fix the problems? And our
Well,
problem is monetary.
yeah, it's a government sleight of hand, just another example of bait and switch, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. So enjoy it while you can, ladies and gentlemen. But someone's going to have to pay for this. And it isn't this generation, our generation. It's going to be the future generations. Somebody's going to pay for it. And if we don't pay for it, if we default on it, we're still going to pay. We'll pay in various ways. So there's no free lunches in this world. We've known that. We were raised on that. And you have a government that truly is out of control when it comes to spending. And I guess we can just sit back and enjoy the quiet before the storm, before it happens. Dave?
I agree.
This is good things, and we hear some good things coming out of the administration. You hear that Trump has cut federal workforce by 24,000. The federal government cut 3,000 jobs in May, and federal employment has now dropped by 24,000 since President Trump took office. This was information that was released today by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Even as federal government jobs were declining, overall employment was increasing, as was employment in state and local government. In April, there were 2.7 million people employed in civilian federal government jobs. In May, that declined to 2.786, which was a drop of 3,000. I rounded the numbers out there. In December of 2016, the month before President Trump took office, there were 2,810,000 civilians employed in the federal government. That has now dropped by 24,000 to the current 2,786,000.
We see, however, there's been some offset of the decrease at the federal level. Total government employment in the U.S., in fact, increased by 5,000 overall in May. State government employment rose by 2,000 in the month, and local government employment rose by 6. That being in May, there are about 5,112,000 state employees across the country and 14.4 million local government employees. Melody.
Well, you know, the Chrysler, Dodge, and the Fiat brands survived Friday's announcement of the Fiat Chrysler's five-year investment plan, and they're going to hang on for exactly as long as the management doesn't see a way to make more money without them. And that's one of the conclusions from the marathon briefing in Italy. The FCA devoted reams of paper and pledged billions of dollars to the brands that make more money now and may deliver higher returns in the future. The Jeep, the Ram, the Alfa Romeo, and the Maserati. Both Chrysler and Dodge have shrunk so much that keeping them running is easy and inexpensive by the auto industry's cash-devouring standards. And, you know, Chrysler just sells two vehicles. I always liked Chrysler products. The 300 Sport Sedan and the Pacifica minivan. Dodge has five. The performance-oriented Charger and Challenger. Journey, the Durango SUV, and the Grand Caravan minivan. And those are cars. Dodge has a nice truck too, Dave, don't they?
They do.
And we do have time for a few commercials coming your way. It's Monday, ladies and gentlemen. Please bear with me. We'll be right back after these few short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And we're here in the second segment of Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, you can listen to these programs live and archived on a long-term basis. And I was finally able to get through to Greg Hunter, and he's scheduled to be on next Tuesday, the 12th. And the month of May just went by so fast. I told them, I says, I was still back in April. I didn't realize it. I mean, they were gone for 2 weeks, and so we missed them for May, but we have them here for June. So mark your calendars down for June. Oh, that'll be a good day, June 12th. That's the summit between
North Carolina
and President Trump in Singapore. So, well, it's still, we still have a few days to make sure that it continues, but so it'll be a good day to have them on.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
I don't know if it's going to be fun, but you know, certainly will be interesting. And as Greg Hunter always is. But what about 102 million working age Americans that don't have jobs?
How about it? You know, don't get too excited about all those good employment numbers we've been telling you about and that you've been reading in the mainstream media. You know, in actuality, the numbers aren't very good at all. You know, in fact, you know, for years, the federal government's been taking numbers out of one category and putting them into another category and calling it progress, full employment even. You know, we're being told that the U.S. unemployment rate has fallen to 3.8%, supposedly the lowest in 50 years. Well, if these were honest numbers, real and actual numbers, it'd be great news. But they're not. You know, according to the Federal Reserve, there were 6,065,000 working-age Americans unemployed in May. That'd be an excellent number if it were actually honest. But of course, that number doesn't tell the whole story. We also have to factor in the other category of working-age Americans that are not currently employed. They're not considered to be officially unemployed because they're considered not to be in the labor force. What is up with that, Melody?
Well, according to the Federal Reserve, 95,915,000 working-age Americans were not in the labor force in May, and this is an all-time record high. And this is how the federal government has been making the employment numbers look so good. The number of Americans that are quote-unquote officially unemployed keeps going down, and the number of Americans not in the labor force keeps going up. So when you add 6,065,000 and 95,915,000 together, you come up with a grand total of 101,980,000 working-age Americans that do not have a job right now. So we essentially have 102 million working-age Americans that are not employed. And that is at the same level that we had 4 years ago. And back during the peak of the last recession, the number of working-age Americans without a job never surpassed the 100 million mark. So let me get this straight, Dave. So that means that there are more working-age Americans without a job right now than there was at any point during the great last recession.
Yep. According to the data.
And all of these economic optimists, Larry Kudlow out there, should, you know, what do they ever say about these numbers? According to John Williams of ShadowStats.com, if honest numbers were being used, our unemployment rate would be somewhere around 21% at the moment. That is a slight improvement from the 22% level that we were at not too long ago, but it is not nearly good enough. So please don't try to convince us that the U.S. economy is doing well until we get the number of working-age Americans without a job under 100 million. You have Americans continue to spend far more money than they are making. Americans have been spending more than they're making for 28 months in a row, in fact. And for the 28th month in a row, year-over-year growth in household spending has outpaced incomes. Sending the savings rate back down to just 2.8%, the lowest since the debt-funded holiday spending spree of December 2017, and just shy of record lows.
Obviously, Melody, not sustainable this is. Yeah, and in the final analysis, there's really nothing sustainable about our current economic situation, despite what we're hearing. We're in what some analysts are calling the terminal phase of the greatest debt bubble that the people the world over have ever seen. And there's an increasing number of indication that, you know, the debt party is about to come to a very abrupt end. You know, we've never fully recovered from the last recession, and all of our long-term financial imbalances have continued to get worse, not just in the U.S., but in many countries across the globe, China included. For the moment, much of the country is enjoying a debt-fueled standard of living. You know, do we deserve this? You know, in theory, no. And most of us have absolutely no idea that there's no way this state of affairs can continue much longer without major consequence. And that's what Melody has been preaching for the last many months, that this debt-fueled economy, not just government spending, but unfortunately, they're leading by example and continue to do so, down to individual households with consumer debt, you know, not counting mortgages, at an all-time high. We just can't consume more than we produce forever. The same thing is true for our country. You know, time's running out. Most Americans are oblivious to this, what ought to be a basic, simple fact.
And you know, when we think about the tax reforms, you wonder, I mean, do we really need the tax reforms when the economy was supposedly rolling along with no problems? My idea of thinking of the tax reform was needed to keep people employed. And so we would be probably in this recession. The recession probably have already started if we didn't have the tax reform. So all these measures that we've seen in the past has just been to continue this level of deception to the American people. And because they're not going to, as long as they have, you know, somebody's hurting, you know, the number of people unemployed, that given up, they're off the books anymore, so to speak. I mean, they're not out there running up debt. Well, maybe they are. Maybe they're living on their debt. Maybe that's why the debts are rising so rapidly. You know, that's why the savings rate is dropping. Maybe it isn't that they're just out there spending. Maybe they're using their savings in order to get by. So it's all how you look at it. But I do believe time is running out. And everybody sees these great stock markets, 25,000 Dow, you know, 7,000 plus NASDAQ. As long as those numbers are up there, people are just oblivious to what's going on around them. And it's not the first time. It's not like this is new, Dave. It's not like we haven't been down this road before. And everybody should know it. I mean, just think when Holland had their tulip bubble. Just think if people from around the world in today's world were buying those tulips, how high those prices would have, you know, went. They would have sold for $50,000 or $100,000 for those tulip bulbs. Look how much longer they'd been able to extend that bubble if the world had been synchronized in order to buy these tulips and that people were able to go into debt for. But so anyway, it's bizarre. It's dangerous. It is a very dangerous time because we're not getting the truth of the true economy. We just have a bunch of cheerleaders telling us that everything's great and everything's wonderful. Well, show me the facts. Show me the numbers. Tell me, why do we have to go trillions of dollars in debt if the world is so, if we're doing such a great job? Employment is, you know, by most measures, you know, we hear from government that, you know, again, the numbers are strong. We're talk about a recession in 2019, even though they continue to tell us with a low percentage of the labor force are by far the lowest since records started, the initial unemployment claims I'm talking about. as a percentage of the labor force. In May 2018, unemployment rate dropped to 3.8%, but it's really 20%. And Dave, I just saw a number today. I didn't have a chance to follow up on it, but the youth of this country, their unemployment rate is around 20%.
Mm. Believe it.
Which is very high for our youth. It's a very high number for our youth. And so I found that staggering. That the youth can't get jobs.
And at the same time, they're, you know, plagued with record high student loan debts.
Yes.
Not good timing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they can't get jobs or if the jobs aren't there that pay high, you know, that aren't well-paying jobs in addition to that they're not there. But the May 2018 unemployment rate dropped to 3.8%, as we talked about. Touched only once since 1969 on April 2000, just as the stock market peaked before a 30-month long bear market and the economy fell into a recession. You have strong economic indicators are always welcome, but they do not guarantee that growth can be sustained. Look at retail sales, for example. They are now at a record high, but they were also at record highs just before the two-month just before the two previous recessions. Retail sales may be at a record, but they were also at records before the last two recessions. And again, look at the retail stores that are closing. Sure, it's online buying, online retail sales, but how is that helping when you have brick and mortar stores closing their doors? So that there's a conflicting message there. You know, those brick and mortar stores close, there goes jobs. So forecasting the economy is just as difficult as forecasting the stock market. Economists are very good explaining what already happened and why and cheerleading, but they're not very good at predicting at what's going to happen next.
Well, they know that too.
Yeah, they do that.
There's an economist at the International Monetary Fund, Prakash Lungani, who showed in a recent study that professional forecasters missed, get this, 148 out of 153 world recessions. Now, I don't know the details of just exactly what that means, but that doesn't bear well for forecasts in the current time and future. But it's
it makes
not also,
sense.
Yeah, it's not
sense.
Surprising. You're right. Yeah. I mean, economic indicators rarely flash warnings before a recession actually arrives. Economic downturns seem to come unexpectedly. Well, to some. Apparently to many. But regardless of the difficulties, analysts are always looking for clues. You know, one measure that's received attention as a predictor of future recessions, as we've been talking about, is the shape of the yield curve. You know, it seems that when longer-term rates drop below short-term rates, like, you know, the 30-year note dropping below the 10-year or the 10-year dropping below the 2-year, you know, a recession has followed every time since, I believe, 1950. This is also true for unemployment claims. A recession seems to follow whenever they drop below 300,000. Now, it makes sense that an inverted yield curve would predict a recession, but it's not easy to explain why employment seems to be strongest just before the economy slows. It's a difficult set of facts to rationalize. On one hand, it's easy to speculate, you know, that when longer maturity rates drop below shorter rates, it's because the market expects future economic activity to weaken. On the other hand, explaining why strong levels of employment precede a recession, that's not so easy, even though it also appears to be true. It's confusing, and it certainly isn't easy, as I just said, but Melody, it still means we've got to pay all that much closer attention to these economic indicators, and you know, step back every now and then, and you know, take a long look at the big picture.
Well, you know, too. I mean, and you can look at it this way: pretty much the bankers and all the Wall Streeters around the world, they want every penny out of the economy. The money is set up for it to flow in from your retirement accounts, from your pension accounts, and they certainly don't want people pulling out their money and sticking it into something that they don't have access to. Mm-hmm. So it pretty is, yeah, they do ignore any, you know, so many ignore any indicator that we're heading into a recession, because they don't certainly don't want to be the one to choose the panic or create the panic. They don't want their clients to panic. They don't want the world to panic. And again, gee whiz, they might put some of their money into gold.
You know,
they might want to buy some gold and, you know, put some money into a safe haven. Gee whiz, we can't have that.
God forbid.
So, I mean, it is, and it truly is amazing that, you know, financial planners and these bankers, there's so much power and control over these accounts, particularly now with the mutual funds and everything, the way it is structured, how Wall Street is structured anymore. And now you have the algorithms, you have the computer trading. To get every last, you know, advantage. They don't want to give up on anything. So saying that there is going to be a recession coming our way is the last thing that they want to make any announcements to the people, to the general populace. Oh, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Lay it on the line. I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com. Today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. In the third segment, we're going to talk a little bit about North Korea. We're going to talk about Trump, his coal and nuclear power. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Puerto Rico. And it's a personal issue with Dave, and I think it's important because you don't hear anyone talking about Puerto Rico. But I have a different personal impact on because I look to why Puerto Rico is in the position that it's in, and it can be, we can draw a close comparison to what's going to happen here because it's much of the same. And I do believe it'll be some sort of a catastrophic event that Puerto Rico had that will happen here in the United States that will bring us to the same outcome. And let's get started right away. Let's talk about what a summit with North Korea. And if we don't finish up with the Puerto Rico issue, I might not have a chance to talk about what I wanted to talk about with Puerto Rico. We'll bring it back on Wednesday. So again, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you mark your calendars if we don't get back to that, and mark it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just mark it anyway. So I lost.
Okay. What a summit with North Korea could look like?
Yes. Dan DePetris, he's a fellow at Defense Priorities, wrote today that the atmosphere surrounding the June 12th summit between Trump and Kim Jong-un has become a game of will they or won't they. It's true. American and North Korean diplomats have engaged in days of careful preparation, culminating in a trip to the New York City by a high-ranking North Korean official for the first time in 18 years. And on Friday, President Trump told reporters that the summit was back on for June 12th. All of this diplomatic movement is quite impressive from a historical standpoint, but a summit would mean zilch if both sides are unable or unwilling to arrive at a consensus about substance. And the substance is exactly where the negotiations are likely to hit a series of roadblocks. As it now stands, the bottom line positions of Washington and Pyongyang are so far apart as to be practically irreconcilable. Any talks between the U.S. and North Korea may very well depend on whether President Trump is open to settling for a package of measures from the North Koreans that is less than the ideal of a total, complete, and relatively quick denuclearization. So, asked by CBS News to define what denuclearization means, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said total, full, and complete, unequivocally. This includes not only the destruction of every single North Korean nuclear weapon, but the demolition of all enrichment facilities and plutonium reprocessing plants.
Yeah, and asking the North Koreans to uproot, you know, the entirety of their nuclear weapons infrastructure and swallow, at least in their minds, the indignity of removing themselves from the nuclear club. That's going to be incredibly difficult for Kim's regime to stomach. And indeed, the Trump administration's essentially betting the house on the best but least likely outcome, that is full, complete, and total denuclearization. Could the White House be setting itself up for failure by, you know, classifying anything short of complete, verifiable, and irreversible dismantlement as a losing hand? And to take that, you know, an analogy further, is, you know, President Trump as a poker player putting all of his chips on the table and hoping for the royal flush? You know, like every good gambler, the president has to be open to other winning combinations. Something short of that royal flush, maybe a straight four of a kind. A permanent, verifiable termination of North Korea's weapons of mass destruction would obviously be the gold standard. Yet the gold standard could be out of reach. I mean, there are other possibilities short of that high threshold that, you know, would only be a boon to the cause of global nuclear nonproliferation, but would also allow the U.S. to walk away from the negotiations as a winner. You know, what would that, look like? Well, one example could include an interim accord whereby Kim surrenders a portion of his nuclear warheads to the United States or United Nations in exchange for a temporary suspension of UN Security Council sanctions and the establishment of U.S. interests in Pyongyang. You know, the North Koreans, under that scenario, I guess, would be permitted to retain a small nuclear arsenal for deterrent purposes. That would be the only condition that the Kim regime commits and implements a nuclear missile test freeze, the suspension of warhead intercontinental ballistic missile production and plutonium reprocessing, and a cap on the quantity and quality of the enriched uranium its scientists can produce. You know, this smaller scale agreement could serve as a valuable placeholder on the way towards more intensive follow-up negotiations. You know, all the while, in the meantime, forcing North Korea to demonstrate to the international community that it is, in fact, willing and able to meet its commitments.
Well, you know, Kim has been made out to be a tyrant to his people and a rogue to his neighbors. But his actions over the past, or his first 7 years as leader, consists of someone that's a little more interested in keeping himself at the top of the system than rushing into a war of choice with the United States. And also what I found interesting, Dave, is his meeting with the Syrian President Assad. I thought that's something out of the, you know, if you want to think of something that's going to kink a deal, you know.
Whew.
So, you know, I find, yeah, I know. I mean, it's just, and you know what? I really think he's trying to see who's all on his side, and he's gaining his strength from those who stand behind him, whether it be Russia, Iran, Syria, you know, China, you know. So it's, I wish I was a little fly on that wall in that meeting. But many tend to forget that North Korea has been a nuclear weapons state since 2006 and that the United States have managed to deter Pyongyang from using its nuclear capabilities since then. And under the Kim dynasty, unless the Kim dynasty is suicidal, there's no evidence to date that is Washington can effectively deter North Korea indefinitely, just as it successfully deterred the far more powerful Soviet Union and Communist China during the Cold War.
Wow. That's, those are some very interesting points. Well, June 12th.
June 12th.
We're just a little more than a week away. We're going to be staying tuned to this, to developments leading up to that, obviously. Now,
I'll tell you what my prediction is going to be. My prediction
Tell
is
me.
Going to be they're going to meet on June 12th, and I think it's just going to be a meeting. I don't think they're going to come up with any final, you know, arrangements, agreements. They're just going to be furthering the talks. I don't think there's going to be anything that's hammered out in that meeting.
I see the same thing. I think perhaps there may be agreements in principle at most.
Yeah.
Otherwise, sort of like an outline for a follow-up meeting. Perhaps even, you know, with a specified date and location. It clearly is at this point, I think, managing the world's expectations here, so they can both come out of this somewhat as win-win, which I know isn't in always our president's way of thinking, but I think he's well, hopefully he's coming around, if not come around, to see that some level of win-win is essential in this critical area. Now, Melly, I'm thinking, you know, that we've got some time left. Why don't we just skip to the Puerto Rico discussion, if you don't mind?
No, that's fine.
I'll share some personal thoughts about a topic that I believe cuts to the core of who we are as Americans, and that transcends even our passions for gold and silver. You know, these thoughts and, you know, and opinions are my own, and they don't necessarily reflect the views of Discount Gold Silver or any of its other staff. And Melody has some thoughts that she'll share later on in this discussion, unless we do run out of time, in which case we'll bring it back up on Wednesday. But the New England Journal of Medicine last week published the results of a Harvard study that estimates that more than 4,600 people died in Puerto Rico as a result of Hurricane Maria last September. That's a stark contrast to the official death toll of 64 we've been reading about for over 8 months. Now, researchers surveyed about 3,300 randomly chosen households across the island. Results indicate that 14.3 deaths per 1,000 people occurred between September 20th, which is when Maria hit, and December 31st. Now, comparing that post-Maria mortality rate with the same period in 2016 allowed the researchers to conclude that there are 4,645 additional deaths in the 3 months following the hurricane. Now, those figures and the underlying methodology that I just summarized are disputed by some, like biostatistician Donald Berry, the University of Texas Anderson Cancer Center. He believes the Harvard estimate is high and could be off by thousands easily, presumably meaning, you know, the real number is in fact closer to 64 than the 4,645. But no matter, you know, whether the real death toll is 4,600, 2,600 or less, common sense does suggest, I think, that, you know, many more than 64 Puerto Ricans died as a result of Maria. The survey also found that the average household in the island went 41 days without cell service, 68 days without water, 84 days without electricity after the brutal storm. And significantly, Melody, more than 30% of households reported interruptions to medical care, especially access to essential medications and powering respiratory equipment. The Associated Press reminded us last week that Maria caused the longest blackout in U.S. history, leaving the entire island without power, including those in hospitals and nursing homes, again, many of whom relied on respirators. And after an eight-month, $3.8 billion federal effort to try and end the blackout, officials now say that Puerto Rico's Public Electric Authority, which is the nation's largest, is almost certain to collapse again when the next hurricane hits. That doesn't bode well. That historic blackout still exists today for roughly 12,000 homes and businesses on the island. Now, we've heard that Puerto Rico's electrical grid was in serious disrepair even before Maria, and a long-term redesign is in the planning stages. But let's face it, that's not going to help anytime soon. And as the AP reported, although work crews worked long and hard after the devastating storms to restore power, you know, in many places they simply lacked adequate supplies to do the job right. So now officials there are warning Puerto Ricans to stockpile enough emergency supplies to survive as long as 10 days without help. Look, I get it. Disaster assistance funded by taxpayers isn't cheap. In fact, Congress has appropriated over $136 billion in disaster relief in 2017 and 18 because of damages from hurricanes Maria, Harvey, and Irma, wildfires in California, and other calamities. The level of response, however, coordinated by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, and other federal departments to last year's three major hurricanes shows a stark contrast. 9 days after Maria hit, 1.6 million meals had been delivered to Puerto Rico, while 5.1 million had been delivered after Harvey and 10.9 million after Irma. Over the same period, 9 days, that is, following the storm, 2.8 million liters of water had been delivered to Puerto Rico, compared to 4.5 million after Harvey and 7 million after Irma. 9 days after Maria, FEMA and other federal agencies had sent 10,000 workers to the island. In the same period, 30,000 had been sent after Harvey and 22,000 after Irma. On average, FEMA has provided about 3,000 in housing assistance to Puerto Rican households to help repair their homes. That's compared to almost 7,000 to Texans affected by Hurricane Harvey. You know, the need for tarps was especially severe. Almost 500,000 homes and businesses badly damaged or destroyed. FEMA needed hundreds of thousands of tarps, but just over 5,000 were delivered 9 days after Maria, and that's 20 times less than what was delivered after Irma, 4 times less than Harvey. Now, although the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has installed nearly 60,000 temporary roofs, many of them tarps, tens of thousands of homes there are reportedly still roofless. Many of those properties' occupants have been sleeping for over 8 months in their cars, on their balconies, or in makeshift homeless shelters. And only 21,000 households have received federal aid to carry out permanent repairs to make their houses livable again. To make matters worse, Melody, the current school year is about to finish with more than a third of Puerto Rico schools shuttered, perhaps forever. And I know we're going to start to run out of time. These latest closings are said to be the result of a sharp draft in enrollment that began as far back as the Great Recession and worsened after last year's hurricane, with many families simply leaving the island. You predicted it.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about this when we come back on Wednesday, because it is an important issue, and it is a humanitarian crisis. It is an issue, and we should all be involved in some way. But until then, I'll be back tomorrow with Pastor Butch Paul. Dave and I will be back Wednesday. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
If I got me a wealthy man, I would not.